You and your degenerate friends already waste enough time thinking about disc golf. But just in case, here's some extra material on the Fish Golf Broadcast. On this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I sat down with Eric Oakley. Eric, what you thinking about?
Thinking about disc golf, thinking about life, thinking about the name of your podcast.
What about it?
I love it. It's got to be the Fish Golf Broadcast. It's so good.
No, it's terrible.
Everybody
says so.
I love it. Well, I will eat a good pun or wordplay up. I don't know why. This stuff works for me.
Everybody hates the name of this podcast.
Okay.
You're making me. You're defending. This is.
I'm sorry, Andrew.
Andrew. Yeah. All right. So
I'm digging in deep.
Twisting the
dagger.
Eric was taking score at the OTB Open, and we played on two different cards together, and he kept calling me Andrew, and it felt like I was being called to the principal's office or. At worst, like, I was late for dinner or something.
Yeah. Andrew, we need to eat your vegetables.
names are, like, important. What is the name you have for yourself in your head?
Eric.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's good. That's
solid
what
name.
You're called.
Yes.
There's also a lot of other things going on in that head, right?
Yeah.
Would you describe yourself as a mild-mannered, laid-back personality?
At times. But I have a lot of emotion. I think I can be super hyped, and like my highs are very high, as in the excitement and positivity that I feel. But the lows can be really tough, and coming from soccer, I've talked about this a lot. Coming from soccer, it's like you take that frustration mm-hmm. and you do something with it.
Yeah, you run harder.
Yeah, harder, and get stuck in on a tackle or something like that, and I do something with it, but you can't in disc golf. Sometimes you can put it into a throw, but it's like generally not advised because you should be just sticking to the same motion that you always have, and you're not going out to do field work or practice round where you're just rage throwing as much as possible. That doesn't prove to be successful. So that's something I've had to really dive in and figure out a lot of.
I have a very timely reference to 30 Rock,
mm-hmm.
the critically acclaimed television show that appeared on NBC.
Pretty good. I've heard of it.
Yeah. I believe Jack Donaghy refers to putting something in his mind vice and crushing it. So I watched the whole thing this winter for probably the fourth time. And I started thinking about, like, when I'm confronted with a difficult situation, taking all of my like anger and rage mm-hmm. and like all the insecurities that like manifest on the disc golf course, and like, how do I put that in my mind vice and turn it into focus?
Just crunch it and then use energy and push it somewhere. I mean, Melton has had me like, hey, put it in a box. And he's like, no, do the motion. Like, put it together. And he said, oh, give me that box. And he takes it and he throws it in the woods. And it's like, all right, you're good. Move on. But I think what you're trying to say is you take it and funnel it.
I want to turn all of those negative emotions into focus.
Right? Yeah. That's tough.
It's really tough. But that's my story.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how do you channel your like fire
mm-hmm.
into good disc golf?
It's been
1 week since you looked at me.
It's been. It's tough because I've had a lot of things that have worked in the past, mm-hmm. and then I feel like I'm constantly having to find something, a new thing. Like I can do that thing that helps focus and reset me to a place where I feel good about it. But then I have to, like, okay, that thing isn't refocusing me or resetting my mental space. So I have to try and find different things, whether that's taking a minute, scrunching my mini, or that's taking a minute, closing my eyes, focusing on my breath. I've also talked about it before as having a reset. And the way I like to refer to it is through video games, is that a lot of video games you play, you go to a save point.
Okay.
And you go and try the boss, mm-hmm. you die, go back to the save point.
Yep.
And then you go back through. And I want to be able, like, I look back at it as turning the game off, almost mm-hmm. resetting the game sometimes. And that's what I've been trying to find with my game. It's like, how do I have a mental reset? When I do this thing, I reset. I'm back at the save point. And I'm back where I was with all the gear I had, everything I have. I'm ready to go tackle the boss again. And that's kind of the mindset you have to have, is each throw is another boss or level you have to pass through. So I had a small clap where I just take my hands, clap softly, mm-hmm. and that is usually what I do. And I still do that from time to time, but I've been in such a better headspace in general to where I'm not hitting those anger highs, of frustrating highs.
Yeah.
And I've had more frustrating moments in like practice rounds and then field work sessions and putting sessions than I have when I'm playing in disc golf tournament rounds.
What's causing that? Because generally, like, practice rounds are pretty lighthearted, and mm-hmm. field work sessions are, you know, deliberately focused, and mm-hmm. putting is just a thing you do.
Yeah. Like,
the consequential part of being a professional disc golfer is the tournament round.
Yeah.
Why those other things?
I think because I'm trying to take those and use everything in that to apply towards the tournament rounds.
Okay.
And I'm having an issue of like, I want to be really good in those rounds, where when I go step up to the tournament, it's like, it's just a whole different mindset of, I'm going to do my best. It's me versus the course. Whatever I have today is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And if that's going to be three down, I'm going to shoot the best three down I can. And three down on most courses we play, it's like, using that as an example, it's like, is it a number? Sometimes that is a solid score, but most of the times it's not. And I need to be able to be focused to go and do so. So I think so much of it came from, I had struggles when I was with DD, and I think some of it was influenced not necessarily directly from DD. It was like my own pressures that I put on because I wanted to win for them. I wanted to play well for them. And, you know, that's obviously some things that they wanted. Every company would love to see their players do well. So that's not right to say that they were like, you need to play better, or you're not going to be on the team. That was never the case. It was just stuff that I was really trying to do for them. And when it wasn't happening, I was leading to me being outward with my frustrations, and a lot came of that. And the start of last season, before the season started, about 2 weeks before Vegas, mm-hmm. I got frustrated in a casual round and broke my hand. I hit a basket with my hand, and that was really stupid. And ever since then, I saw a therapist, have worked constantly on the mental side of the game, because it is the thing that was controlling me. And it still creeps up from time to time, but it's been mainly in my practice rounds. And I still don't know why that's happening, but I'm really trying to recognize that and also remove myself from situations when I'm in those moments, because mm-hmm. I'm not gaining anything when I'm feeling that way. And like, if I'm having a bad putting session and I'm getting frustrated and I'm like, it's getting there, it's like, nope, I will literally leave my putters where they are, go inside or go wherever I can and watch a YouTube video, just chill out and really just kind of look to get fully distracted from the situation.
Yeah.
Until I'm ready to approach the situation with the right headspace. And I think that that's leading to better rounds in tournament play, because even if I'm making mistakes, like, I am trusting the process of everything that I have done to be good in the moment. So it's been, I think that I had to have that moment to get to be where I am now, because I feel happy when I play, because I guess it's that I almost took it away from myself. So that has humbled me immensely, that I have to, I need to understand that this is something that I am very fortunate to get to do. So here we are. Like that's a big part of it, of that shell shocking moment really has transcended me to have a much better idea of what I need to be working on and how I need to approach the game. And we can get into the details of the approach to the game, as in not only having a good headspace, but like we were discussing earlier before the podcast, of, you know, different things that we need to recognize when we're in the moment on the course, how to manage that to carry me forward, because it can help keep me in a good headspace whether that's to have a better headspace for the next tournament or the very next throw. Doesn't matter. There's always things that we can do to help ourselves.
Yeah, for sure. I'd like to save that for segment two of our podcast.
Perfect. We'll segue later.
Yeah. Good foreshadowing.
Yes.
As we say in the biz. Eric, as another person who's kind of been identified on like disc golf YouTube as mm-hmm. being a hothead sometimes, mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable to sometimes go back and watch yourself and feel like, wait, that's not who I am. That's just what they happen to clip in the video. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, for myself, I am maddest not about the results of a shot, but about my focus that led to the shot being bad. Mm-hmm. Like my lack of focus, really. And it's like the 5 seconds after that, I am livid with myself. Mm-hmm. But then everything after that, I want to go back to being the best card made I can be.
Totally.
Can you, like, to the extent you're comfortable, share a story about what you've seen from yourself on coverage? And then what level of emotion do you think is appropriate for professional disc golfers to show mm-hmm. and still be professional?
Yeah. I do remember Music City. I was on a Jomez card and I missed a putt and stomped and got really frustrated and swore and everything. And it was just like, I don't like that. And I don't like being that way, but it still comes out. I do think that there is a level for pros that we should have a very small window to get out frustrating moments. We see it in all sports. I've seen plenty of moments where Tom Brady just threw a pick and then they're showing his face and he mouths the word fuck as loud as he possibly can. And it's like,
even strawberries don't touch that mouth, but fuck does.
Yes, right? I know, Tom Brady. We can't. Yeah, he says those words. I know, crazy. Shocker to all those New England fans and Tampa Bay fans. But still, like, it's at that point where it's okay. We're adults. We're humans. Like, feeling and showing those emotions is good. It's just about if there's a window. And I feel like it's probably 3 to 5 seconds after mm-hmm. the shot has finished doing whatever terrible thing it's done. And you have a 3 to 5 second window, because it's generally going to be within reason of your card mates are now not throwing.
Yep.
Also, there's a level of don't be so frustrated to where now you're affecting other cards on the course.
Right.
That's definitely too far. And that can happen if you say something loudly. But at the same time, I think that comes under a disc golf distraction of people being able to express those things. As long as you're not, it's not, again, within reason. But in that small window, let it go. Get it out. Whatever frustrating thing you need to say. Sometimes it's better to be, you know, a little more quiet, but sometimes an audible no or an audible fuck or something is very good for players to get back on track. And now I don't want to hear about a player throwing a shot for the next 3 minutes that didn't work out. I don't want to hear about that. I have been that guy before, and I learned that I don't want to be that guy, because I started to recognize that all I was doing was talking about everything I was doing poorly, even in the middle of rounds.
I have described other players as blank is very interested in what blank is doing.
Yes.
And I don't say that happily about them.
Yes. You're like, I get it. I get it. That sucked. It's like, but I'm going to go throw my shot. And also, you have another shot you need to go throw that you should be focused on, not about the thing that's happened.
Yeah.
Like get back into the moment.
For sure.
And so, yeah, I think that window should be acceptable. And I think it's something that players should should recognize, because again, you are sharing that time with three other players.
Yeah.
And it's, you kind of want that time to be decently well spent. If you're going to be quiet and you're going to just do your own thing, fine, go for it. I'm much more in the, I want to have conversations. I want to talk. I want to hype you up when you do good shots. I want to hype. That's more of how I enjoy the game. I want to also, in my time of not throwing, I want to be a fan of the sport and a fan of the players that are playing the sport. Because if if you throw a great shot, I'm going to say great shot. I can't not be.
It just slips out.
Yeah, it happens.
Do you feel like there's any sliding scale or caveats when the cameras are on or when spectators are present?
No, I don't think there should be. I really don't think that it should be any different, because however you need to approach the game and get through it to shoot your best score. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in that moment is you threw a shot that kicked a tree and win OB, and you need to let it out because that was a terrible break. Yeah, do that. Doesn't matter if there are 1,000 people watching you. Tiger Woods hits one into the rough. I guarantee you he's not being like looking around. Well, oh, there's a kid over there. I probably shouldn't say fuck. No, the dude is letting it out. and granted, in golf coverage, there's a delay.
Yeah.
And they will edit that stuff out. Sometimes they miss it and it happens. But if you're at a live event, you're going to hear everything. Mm-hmm. You're going to hear those guys probably say some terrible things about themselves. But that's just because they're human beings and they're frustrated and they're trying to perfect their craft. So I think I don't think it should change. But you also have to be willing to accept how people will look at you. So that's like your internal balance of how do you want to be professional? But also I think that there is a level of professionalism in handling those moments of adversity.
Yeah. At some level, I don't think it's fair to judge people on like the most consequential 30 seconds of their day.
Yes.
And how they react to that.
Totally.
But I think it's also important that card mates and players kind of have like this peer review,
mm-hmm.
where we are willing to keep each other in check.
Sure.
Like if you're out of line, if you're talking into somebody else's throw, like you should get a warning for that.
100%.
If you are distracting, if your antics are distracting another card on the course, that's a problem.
Yeah.
How did we go about players being willing to have those conversations? Because like you can't do it in the moment without it turning into a fight.
And also taking you away from what you need to be focusing on, even though what they're doing is distracting you. But like, it's still better for you to keep most of your focus on what you're doing and what you can control. And that's tough because I know that the rules are in place and we're supposed to call each other. That's just how it is. Mm-hmm. I've been an advocate of trying to figure out how we get more marshals on the course, but also I feel like we've had marshals on courses and they're still even unwilling to make calls at times because we've seen things that have happened. There have been situations where things have been called, no matter who it's from, and it doesn't go over well. And I think that part of that is we need to shift the narrative away from I'm not doing this as trying to get at you as a personal dig. I am doing this because there are rules and we have to follow those rules. Like I look at it from one standpoint of I actively think about the amount of time I take to throw. And I think that there are plenty of players on tour who do not understand how long they take to assess their lie and then to now throw their disc. And that's bushnelling to walking up to the lie, to choosing their discs and not taking discs with them up to their throw. And so many, the list goes on and on.
Sure.
I actively think about that. I've actively thought about that where the point where somebody in the crowd was walking on gravel and I said, I should tell them to stop because that's distracting me. But now I'm thinking, I have been sitting over my lie for about 20, 25 seconds. So if I do tell them to stop, now I've committed a violation by going over my 30 seconds and then I missed the putt. It was fine. But that's just like a whole thing. It's like that's where we feel like we're in this place. It's like, you should be understanding of the rules and you should be trying to play within them like they do in golf. They can call them, they call themselves on violations.
Right.
And I think that just comes back to the integrity of it all.
The bonkers thing about the example that you're giving is that the time violation has a easily measurable 30 mm-hmm. seconds,
mm-hmm.
assuming that you can like make some allowance for when it starts.
Yeah.
And it has a set of criteria for, you know, the green is clear, you're not distracting other players, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
The courtesy is a much more diffuse
mm-hmm.
set.
It could be opinion based, right? At that point.
And very context based too.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, like, I don't, Eric, unless you've got another 45 hours, I don't know that we're going to solve this particular professionalism versus players being human and being allowed to show some level of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess for my part, thanks for your honesty in like what your struggles have been. And to those listening at home or in your car or on the course or wherever else, don't be afraid to have conversations with players who are clearly out of line.
Mm-hmm. I've had people check me on things when I've had my darker moments, and I have been incredibly thankful for those people. Even if it's a conversation after the round, or if it's something, and it's happened during the round, and I'm willing to do the same for anybody as well. It takes a lot, and it also, but I think it takes it takes a lot as a person to be called on those moments to actually take it in and do something about it. And I think that in my career, I have been called enough by friends, by Tina, by many people, and in my own calling myself and understanding that I needed to make a change. So it's okay to be frustrated. And I think that that is one thing that I don't think people understand as well. They get frustrated and now they're down on themselves for being frustrated. It just snowballs. So talk, express your feelings towards others, be willing to accept it. I don't think that that gets talked about enough. It's like, it's okay to not be okay. but it's, you're going to find your way back to where you want to be if you have the right support system.
I'm Matt Bell, and I listen to the Fish Golf Broadcast while I fish.
I'm Andrew Presnell, and I listen to the Fish Golf Broadcast while I eat my dinner.
If you like where this show is headed, stick around for part two. We'll never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads to start the show. So please support the Fish Golf Broadcast by visiting discgolfbra.com. for hats and other apparel. Fish stamp discs are available at fishdiscgolf.com and daddydiscgolf.com, and you can save 10% on upperparkdiscgolf.com with the code Andrew10 on backpacks and other items. And now, more lies and outrageous claims from our guest, met with calm reason by Fish. Eric, in our first segment, you alluded to being able to make choices in the moment mm-hmm. of a disc golf round that kind of keep your round going without bad stuff snowballing.
Totally.
And I conceptualize this as you're lying in bed at night. Close your eyes, everybody. You're lying in bed at night as you fall asleep. Yeah. You're imagining your round. You've stepped up to hole one. The starter calls your name and your sponsor. It's not an ace because you're not greedy in your vision, but it's parked a tap in. You go to hole two. You've taken the box from your idiot card mates who hacked their way to double and triple bogeys. So and you park it. And you tap in. But then in reality, you go to hole three and you get absolutely fucked. You get boosted down the hill.
Just, it rolls forever.
It takes 2 minutes and 54 seconds once somebody started the timer for you to find it.
And then you can easily say the same comment of, I don't think a disc has ever been here before. How did you even get down here?
This is impossible.
Yes.
So even in your best ideas of how your round is going to go, mm-hmm. you never get to script all the situations that you get put in. Eric, how do you keep the game from speeding up on you when you're confronted with a weird situation or your score not going the way you want?
Keeping things in perspective of I need to have to try and create as many opportunities for me to do well.
What does that mean?
So in certain situations of I'm stepping up and throwing, you know, in my game plan, I'm stepping up and throwing a shot where I feel like if I throw this anywhere from good to great, I will have a putt inside of circle two. Mm-hmm. Great will be parked. Good will be, you know, a 50 footer. And if I can stay in that range, trusting that I am good enough for every single shot that I'm going to throw, that's where we are. Now, when I have actual throwing errors, which happen, everybody misses lines. In those moments, I keep the same concept of I'm picking a shot. So I've had the good game plan of picking the shots that in my variance of a wide range. Let's go from decent to great. I think that's a better range that I can throw a decent shot yep. and have a look. That's a better range because good is probably more like a 40 footer, right? Like we're like pretty close. Like you want to be.
Can we find a stock hole on tour mm-hmm. that people would resonate with?
Let's see. Man, we could rack our brains of like shots that I'm trying to throw.
Let's go to Maple Hill hole one.
Okay.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Great idea.
Your decent shot has cleared the pond, but it bailed out left.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the trees. I'm having to make a good decision here.
Right? Yep.
Yeah. Definitely a Christmas present for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that situation, I'm like that. That was my decent shot. I'm in the trees, but I know that my best thing to do is to now make my next shots as simple as possible.
Throw a one angle shot that approaches the mouth.
Get close. And I like to get more left of the mouth. I don't want to be tucked right because I know that there's that huge tree that I'd have to go around, which brings a lot more variance. So I love being able to see the gap. So I'm envisioning ending up somewhere over there, whether that's an overhand, a forehand that still plays, that I play wider at hole six's fairway, or a spike hyzer that works itself back. Like that's where I'm thinking. The shorter basket, right?
The one they use for skins or something like that. Yeah,
and now you can start to make decisions, right? Now you're having to figure out if you're trying to blast one in.
Yeah, do like I have great, the angle? Like what's the wind in. Doing?
Mm-hmm.
Do I really need this? Like, what's my game situation?
Totally. How did I feel in warm-up? Even.
Yeah.
Like, how have I felt from a similar distance? Because I probably had a shot in practice that threw this shot. Was that shot successful? Was that shot, like, repeatable? And those are the things that start to come into my brain. Again, but I think this is all way more in the preparation of the holes, right? Yeah. And that's why I step up having a good game plan of the practice right. and understanding my bag inside and out.
So you got this, like... It's not a decision tree. It's more of a like outcome tree totally. Of decent, good, great
mm-hmm.
Means if you then execute a decent, good, great, where do you end up? How do you score?
Mm-hmm.
But
I'll take that. And then whenever things do go, if things go less than or worse than decent, now I'm trying to say, well, how do I give myself an opportunity? So it would take on hole six at Maple Hill. Sure. I have thrown a little less than decent drive. So I am probably, I'm down the left, close to the water, but I stayed in bounds. Now all I'm thinking is like, man, that gap towards the wall is terrifying.
But that, I know that's a double waiting to happen.
Yeah, but I know that the gap on the left is like, it's tough. I could throw a decent shot and hit early and still have no putt. So I'm having to then weigh the decision. So a lot of the times is if, again, very dependent, but if I'm over there, I think I'm trying to play more for that left side, even though there are a lot more trees. But if I know if I get one through, it can work. I can get to 15 and move on with the par and feel like a genius. But it's about having opportunities. And in that is that I know if I throw that shot, my opportunity might be a 50-foot knee Anheuser putt.
But it's from inbounds.
From inbounds. I haven't added strokes. I haven't added stress. I know that I won't be the only person to bogey the hole if I happen to not execute that shot. I know that I can use that energy of making a good decision and giving myself even a simplest of opportunity. Like I said, a knee, like Anheuser putt through the trees where I might be able to make it, but I know that it's going to sit close. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to get it done. When I have to stress about a strong tee shot, say we're on the big one over the water and the wind's picked up, now I'm having to stress. If I stress on hole six, my energy levels are going to be much lower by the time I make it all the way around the turn and I'm back on that hole where I need to execute a really good shot to get up, to get my birdie or to get make par pretty simple. So I look at it in that ways of in giving myself these opportunities, I'm also looking to manage the amount of mental energy and mental like capacity that I have for disc golf. And that's why I think it's really important to pick moments where you are aggressive. So you know that coming down the stretch or in the grand scheme of things, in round one, don't be stressing about trying to get that par on six. Like just eat the bogey and go on to the next couple holes where, you know, the whole holes that, I mean, the very next hole is insane. It's like super hard. So it's not like you would rather have good energy for that hole to try and execute that tee shot than stress about saving par and kicking over the wall and taking a double or a triple. And it's like, now you're stressed and worked up and now you're having to hit a tight gap. So it's like, that's other parts of this game that I really try and focus on is no matter what, give myself an opportunity. Even if it's, like I said, a 60 footer, that's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than me hitting the first available tree, trying to park it or kicking OB and trying to park it. And now I've eliminated par from the question. And that's something that I think a lot of players don't recognize. I saw it a lot when Tina and I would go walk around at amateur tournaments.
This just in, Eric dogging on AMs.
Sorry, guys. You guys need to make better decisions, guys and gals. It's straight up. It is so often where you see people, all they see is red. Maybe because it's the bunch of red on their scorecard, but also
course amnage, man.
But also they just like basket. I need to throw it in the basket from everywhere, and it's like no, put it close. Make the game easy. Even if it's a par is a good score. Par is a really good score in almost every single division, and I don't think it's talked about enough. So that's again why this whole thing, managing, having good game plan, but then also being willing to make the game easy by just giving yourself simple opportunities to maybe score, even if you don't always score. But if you don't have those opportunities, your score is just going to balloon. And that's what you're trying to avoid.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the worst things UDisc has done for us is count execution shots.
Yeah.
Like if there's a 495 par three through the woods, anything that's not in circle two, the best it can be is a fairway short.
Yeah.
And that's a lie.
And that's like, not a fairway stat. You didn't do anything worth it. Yeah.
Nope. Or if I lay up a circle two putt, it shows as a miss.
Yeah.
But I executed my game plan.
Totally.
Like
you made a good decision. You made a golf decision at that point. It's like, to me, it's like assists in basketball. If I'm dribbling down, have an easy opportunity for layup, but I lob it up to you for an alley-oop, I get an assist at least. Mm-hmm. And that's tracked as like, I don't get a missed shot or anything like that for doing so. Like that's the same kind of concept. It's like, it's looked at as a good decision where it's like something that I know it's difficult for UDisc to do. The UDisc guys are fantastic. They have done so much for our sport. So this isn't a complaint. It's just like a mild critique that it could be something that we could add going forward. How many circle one putts have you had this year where you're like, I have no putt? and this is going to count against my circle one percentage.
And it counts exactly the same as that windless flat 12 footer.
Totally. That doesn't make, and that to me, that doesn't make sense, because at that point, like I remember being in the woods, I think it was in Music City, where I was inside the circle and I legitimately had no way to make a putt.
The best you could do is get it to the base of the basket or
and
something.
I think I laid down on my stomach and spun it out to get it under the pin, like yeah. maybe upside down and slid it there like a hockey puck. And then and it was like, yeah, but that like technically counts against my circle one putting because I landed in circle one, but that was an obstructed putt. But the shot that I threw to get out to get my par was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
and I wasn't rewarded for that layup.
And I don't mean to pivot to bagging on UDisc or something. I think it's also something that viewers of any of the media channels are going to be fooled by
mm-hmm.
when they see a player
shoot 12 down, but he was 75% inside the circle because he had a couple putts that he couldn't make.
Yeah, or if they see a player who is laying up Maple Hill hole 14 from 40 feet.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I might lay that up. Ricky Wysocki might go at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the amateur players watching are going to think Ricky's the hero, mm-hmm. Fish is the idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But we both did our game plans.
Totally. And that's the whole thing that we have to figure out with the game plans of making decisions and giving yourself the best opportunity. Yeah. Your best opportunity in that situation is laying it up. Because you know that this is not, I needed to be closer than this.
I ain't that dude.
Yeah. And you don't need to be that dude. You need to be Andrew Fish. You need to be the guy that you're going to be and go attack the course however you need to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people will sometimes just go outside their bubble. Like, you need to look to expand your bubble, but you need to layer it like an onion where it needs to be very thin, gradual layers. You don't just start doing things. Like, and I've had this problem so many times whenever I play. When I first started playing on tour, I played a lot of rounds with Eagle and Simon. And I had the issue where I threw shots like Eagle and Simon. And I'm like finding myself making errors on errors on errors on errors. The moment I started to actually play well was that right after that first half season that I was on tour. And I went and worked on my game and started to understand what my strong suits were. The moment after that, that was GBO lead card. That was winning an A tier in Seattle at Fort Staley. And that gave me confidence to become like, I actually am going to do this and I should do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And it's like, you know, early on, it was an ambition and I knew I was capable of it, but that's when it started to show. But that's because I played Eric Oakley golf. Every single tournament I went to, I was playing my game. I was throwing my shots. I was throwing the DDX and the CD2 when Eagle and Simon were throwing PDs and PD2s. But that was helping me play well. And I started to recognize that. And that, I think, was probably one of the best things I ever did. So maybe that goes to everyone else, is stay in your bubble and slowly expand it out as you gain confidence in your game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a little bit earlier, you were telling me about a conversation you had had with Paige.
This is a good one. I love this.
Well, go on. So, if it's that good, no, don't wait.
It's so good. So when dissecting your rounds, this is something that Paige has talked to me about, and it's tracking the amount of, like, track your errors, what happened, but also tracking your unforced errors and understanding, is there a common theme amongst your unforced errors? It's probably better to do this over like 2 to 3 tournaments rather than you can do it tournament by tournament, but there's definitely some merit to look back 2 or 3 tournaments back and say, where are my errors?
Even with 54 holes, like, that's small sample size.
Totally.
But you get to 150 and you have enough to go off of, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So that's where we're starting to understand, okay, how many throwing errors did I have? Were they tee errors? Were they approach errors? Where am I making mistakes? Are they putting errors? And if those are pretty easy to recognize. Like, if it's tee errors, probably a bad game plan. You're probably, you know, maybe need to adjust some types of shots that you're throwing. If it's approach errors, it's just like, man, you need to go play catch. You need to focus on these approaches. And if it's putting errors, it's time on the green. And it's that focus and confidence that you need to have. So it's like those feel all really fixable. But there's a lot of in the middle where they're making bad decisions. And in those bad decisions, like, you need to recognize, why did you make that bad decision? I was talking about it with you at Champions Cup. I think it was hole 8. I threw my first shot, great spot. Threw my second shot, you know, caught a little tree. It's too tight gap, so it's not necessarily a gimme. And left myself, I think it was like 70, 80 feet away.
You got up and down, right?
I did not. I took a sick bogey because I was sitting there looking at this knee putt from in the woods. And I was going to say, I'm going to nose up, spin it, and run it. And I'm going to fall forward. I'm going to give it everything, give it a chance. If all I have to do is beat that tree. I did not beat that tree. I smoked that tree, had a 40-footer, did not catch the 40-footer, and took a bogey. From inside of 70, 80 feet. Like, that can't happen. And that was, again, that's the same concept of, like, why would I gave myself an opportunity for birdie, but I also had an opportunity in that moment to save myself and save my mental energy, like we talked about earlier, by just
taking a 2-foot par.
Yeah. Par would have been, we could look back at that. A par would have been great. A par would have moved me up the leaderboard. Par would have done a lot of stuff. Maybe put me more in contention for a USDGC spot.
Like,
who knows what that could have done.
Those things stack and stack and stack. And then at the end of your round, you're not chasing 18.
No.
Or yeah. Later in the tournament, you're not having to run another silly putt.
Mm-hmm. Because of that silly error that I had earlier. I'm not having to, you are immediately on the back foot in those moments. But taking a par keeps you on level footing. You know what I mean? Like, you are balanced. You're ready to go. And you're already ready for the next hole. And you didn't stress.
And there's a real expectations thing here as well. Mm-hmm. Like, did you expect to make that 70-footer? Or was it like, if these 9 things go perfectly, might go in?
Yeah, might. Might being the key word there. It's like, yeah, that's that. And that's something that we as golfers have to continue to figure out, because you're not sure how your game is going to feel. I feel like I'm going to tournaments and I'm looking for more backhands now. My backhand feels very good, and I think I'm commonly known more as a very sidearm dominant, or have a very, you know, very high, like, high level sidearm, but I am looking for backhands because that's what's feeling really, really good right now. And starting to recognize those moments of looking for the higher level shots and high percentage shots, where I think sometimes I was even forcing sidearms when I didn't need to, because mm-hmm. I was scared of those shots. So that's another part of this whole process, is we are constantly learning, and our game is constantly going to be changing to where my sidearm might feel really good, but it might not be that good for this tournament, even though there's probably a couple sidearm dependent holes. But I have the perfect disc for this turnover shot, and it's effortless for me to throw. So why wouldn't I lean on that? Even because people expect me to throw a sidearm? No. Throw the high, like, feel out where you are as well. And again, that comes down to this decision-making and checking back on these unforced errors and using that to give you an idea of what to work on. I think that was the biggest part of what Paige was trying to get across to me, was, what is your most common error over the last 3 tournaments? Oh, you had bad approaches? Cool. Spend time playing catch. Let's go grab a disc. Mm-hmm. Let's go play catch. Like, that helped so much. And I do it from time to time when I feel like I'm grinding into those modes of, like, man, I'm having some rounds that are so close,
but I'm just bleeding strokes for no good reason.
And that's when I start to look at it. It's like, why am I making consistent mistakes? And that's that tracking of unforced errors can do wonders for a lot of players, and just in general, just help your game get a little more polished.
All right. Good advice from Eric Oakley. I hope you liked this show. If you did, you can find more from me on Instagram and Twitter at fish58320. And if you thought the show had a buffoon as a guest, where can people find you?
They can find me, the Eric Oakley Whale Pants on YouTube. Check. Oh, I mean, the Eric Oakley is Facebook, Instagram, and a bunch of other stuff. I think I have a Twitter, but I don't really tweet. So
nobody does.
No, some people do. I tweet too much, but that's whatever. Whole nother podcast for that one. But yeah, come follow us. Go to whalesx.com. Go to infinitedisc.com. ThoughtSpace, Clash, you name it. It's they have a lot of amazing support. And yeah, it's been awesome, man. And thank you for having me on here. It's a good time chatting with you, Fish. I think you are a very important person for our game because of how monster brain you are. So keep doing your thing.
He said monster thumber, just in case everybody didn't hear that clearly. Thanks, Eric. That's all for this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast. But be sure to check out previous episodes and subscribe wherever fine podcasts are sold. Check out Fish Golf Broadcast hats and other apparel at discgolfbra.com and badger your friends until they listen too. Join us next time as I goad yet another guest into starting a fight with another touring player, campsite host, or toll booth attendant on the Fish Golf Broadcast.